From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Corte Madera.
Pleasant Hill.
Inner Richmond in San Francisco.
Montclair in Oakland.
Tiburon.
Sausalito.
Japantown, San Francisco.
Berkeley, California.
Coming up, is San Francisco in the midst of another housing bubble, or are we in a housing crisis?
It's very hard to know whether you're in a housing bubble until they pop.
Then we hear about some housing-related measures on the San Francisco ballot.
San Francisco needs to build a lot faster than it has been to address this affordability crisis.
And a San Francisco makeup artist shares stories from three decades behind the scenes of runway shows, drag parties, and zombie proms.
To transform somebody, all you need is a palette of color and imagination.
Bubbles, ballots, and blush. Today on Cross Currents. Real estate markets run in cycles, and right now, our regional market is soaring. While the national median price for a home is just over $200,000, the median price paid for a home in the nine-county Bay Area last month was just about $600. And in San Francisco, it hit $1 million for the first time over the summer. San Francisco now ranks as the third least affordable housing market in the world, behind Hong Kong and Sydney.
There's so much money that's pouring into the Bay Area economy, specifically from IPOs, as we discussed, and stock market gains, that it's really those are the people who are really driving home prices right now. It's sort of lifting off. It's like a balloon floating in the sky.
That's an interview with Michael Brown of Bayport Financial Mortgage from Cron 4. Here's the thing. It's not a recent interview. It was recorded in 1999. Brown was warning of a housing bubble during the height of the first dot-com boom. We all know what happened. The bubble popped. It inflated again around 2003. Then there was the mortgage meltdown. Now, home prices have recovered to levels higher than ever before here in the Bay Area. So it begs the question, are we in another housing bubble, or is this a housing crisis? KALW's Liz Pfeffer has more.
Over the past few years, business has been thriving for real estate agent Jamie Comer. She specializes in lofts in San Francisco's Dog Patch and South of Market neighborhoods, where many of her young, well-heeled tech clients are scooping up properties. But recently, the market has started to get choppy.
If you had talked to me 8 months ago, I would still say, oh, yeah, you're seeing at least 5 to 8 offers on every property. That's not the case as much anymore. Frequently, you're seeing 2 to 3 offers. And, of course, it depends on the category. You know, a $1.5 million home is very different than a one-bedroom condo. The buyer pool is different.
Today, Comer is showing a sleek 2-bedroom live-work loft in Dog Patch. It's 3 stories with an urban indoor-outdoor feel. Ceiling-high windows let in a cool breeze and noise from the nearby freeway. The listing price is $899,000, but she expects it will sell for closer to $1 million.
Hi there.
Hi.
Real estate broker Dan Dodd is stopping by on behalf of clients who have been looking for a while.
They're currently renting?
Mm-hmm. One works for Square, one works for Apple.
Okay, got it. So they're both tech people.
They've written 5 or 6 times. Yeah, on 5 or 6 different properties and lost out every time.
Is this pretty common right now?
It's not really common for my buyers. For this particular set of buyers, they're right at the threshold of what they can afford. So it means they have to be able to sort of suffer through more disappointment. But eventually we'll get something for them.
So even if you have $1 million, it's a tough market. And if you don't, it's even tougher. That's the downside to an upswinging economy. Home prices get so high that home ownership can become unattainable. Or you can sell your home for a profit but still not be able to afford to buy something bigger. This is the case in San Francisco, where real estate values are outpacing incomes. If you're having deja vu, that's because we've seen the local real estate bubble burst twice in the last decade or so. But if you're worrying about or waiting for the next pop, experts say don't hold your breath.
We should think of a housing bubble as an acute condition, something that can come on quickly, it's very sharp, but won't last forever.
Jed Kolko is chief economist for the real estate website Trulia. He uses data to understand housing markets nationwide, but Trulia is based right here in San Francisco. Kolko says the housing issues here aren't the kind of acute condition that characterize a bubble. What we have is a chronic problem.
That can arise because there's more demand for housing than there is supply.
It's something to take note of because whatever the current state of the housing market is, people feel like it's going to last forever. There are some factors that change all the time: interest rates, inventory in certain categories, things like this. But San Francisco's chronic problem is a lack of housing for middle and lower income people. It's not that they can't afford it, it's that it doesn't exist. And real estate investors and speculators are helping drive up that demand.
They start bidding up the price of housing, partly because they expect prices will keep rising. But we know after last decade that home prices don't only go up, they can also go down.
That doesn't mean prices are about to level off. Bay Area homes are actually selling for around what they're worth. Economists determine whether the price of a house is too high based on things called fundamentals, like income and rents in a particular region.
In the San Francisco area right now, prices look about 12% overvalued compared to where they should be based on local fundamentals. During the height of last decade's housing bubble, though, prices looked almost 50% overvalued.
And the more prices are overvalued, the closer we are to a housing bubble and a price crash, which is what led to the foreclosure crisis in 2008.
Now, that doesn't mean that housing is affordable in San Francisco today. Not even close. Poor affordability is the chronic condition of the Bay Area's housing market.
That's in part because in San Francisco, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. According to the Brookings Institution, which reported that from 2007 to 2012, San Francisco's income gap widened more than any other U.S. city. Households at the 95th percentile earned about $350,000 a year, while households at the 20th percentile earned just over $21,000. That huge disparity makes it pretty hard to determine what the average San Franciscan should be able to afford.
There's no perfect way to know what home prices should be at any one point in time. Measuring fundamentals is as much art as it is science.
And do you not know that you're in a bubble until the bubble has been blown up?
One reason that bubbles form is it's very hard to know whether you're in a housing bubble until they pop.
Let's assume this isn't a housing bubble, that we're in the midst of a serious affordability crisis. How does the Bay Area dig itself out?
San Francisco builds much less housing than almost any other metro in the country, particularly compared with metros that also have strong demand. To make a serious dent in our affordability crisis, we would have to build a lot more housing than we build today and than we've built over the past decades.
So to end this affordability crisis, we either need fewer people or more housing. After so many years of underbuilding, Kolko says it will take a long, long time, if ever, for supply to meet demand.
That was KALW's Liz Pfeffer, who joins me now in studio to talk more about San Francisco's housing issues. So, Liz, we just heard your report on the housing affordability crisis in San Francisco. Real estate prices and rents are at unprecedented highs. There's endless controversy over Ellis Act evictions. And just yesterday, Mayor Ed Lee signed controversial legislation legalizing short-term rentals in the city, known as the Airbnb law. This is something that's affecting people on a deeply personal level. But looking toward next week's election, it's also showing up on the ballot, right?
Yes. For the past several election cycles, housing issues have inflamed passions among San Francisco voters. And November 4th, we're going to see issues of affordability come into play in a big, big way. There are two ballot measures in SF to watch out for. The first one I want to talk about is Proposition K. K would set some affordable housing goals for the city. It would build or rehabilitate 30,000 new homes, and half of those would be for the middle class, and at least a third of them would be for low-income families. The backstory on this is that in 2011, Governor Jerry Brown eliminated all local redevelopment agencies. So the city lost about $50 million annually,
for affordable housing. And in November 2012, San Francisco voters said, let's create an affordable housing trust fund to offset the loss of the redevelopment agency and to help recapture that income. So hopefully this would help with oversight of that.
And so does it look like this is going to fix the supply and demand issue that's causing the affordability crisis?
No, but it's a statement that people should consider if they want to see more affordable housing. Prop K was introduced by Supervisor Jane Kim, but this is already a goal that Mayor Edley has promised, and nothing in the measure seems to be particularly binding.
Okay. So what about the other proposition that has to do with housing, Prop G? What's the goal there?
So this is kind of addressing the other half. There isn't the same kind of housing shortage for people who can pay market rate that there is for people who can't. And so there's a lot of people who are coming to San Francisco to invest, and that's really where Prop G comes in. Prop G imposes a hefty tax of 14 to 24% on the selling price of properties that are sold within 5 years after purchase or transfer. And what that means is if you buy a house and you sell it in 5 years, you're going to get hit with a humongous tax. Currently, the highest tax that you can get hit with when you sell your property in San Francisco is 2.5%. The other thing to think about is that, you know, the reason that this was introduced is because they were hoping to sway speculators from coming in and flipping houses. So this is kind of like a big do not enter sign on San Francisco's real estate market for people who don't want to come here and actually set down roots. The other thing to think about is that it could be problematic for people who have to sell for medical or financial reasons. So you buy a home, you lose your job, you get cancer. You need to relocate because your home value is so high and you need that equity, and you're going to get hit with a humongous tax.
So what does City Hall say?
Well, Mayor Edley is staying out of this one. He's pushing a lot of his own housing policies, and he really doesn't have a horse in this race. But Senator Mark Leno, Assemblymember Tom Amiano, and about half the Board of Supervisors are in favor of Proposition G, and that's including David Chu and David Campos. Both of them are battling it out for state assembly, and so housing is a huge issue. Here's a clip of Campos from a recent candidate debate.
But the problem I have is with the leadership of these companies that don't understand that they do have an impact in the cost of living of this city.
And here's David Chu.
We are going through incredible rampant real estate speculation now. We need to make sure that we address it with a measure that both David and I support. Affordability, housing affordability, protecting our tenants is and has been the number one issue that I care about. And I have been working on this issue for the past 6 years since I came on.
All right. So housing is a hot topic in this assembly race then, isn't it?
Yes. Last week, the board approved two housing-related proposals proposed by Chu and Compo. So they're both really trying to show right now how invested they are in making a change in affordable housing in San Francisco.
So what are the voters saying? The voting base of San Francisco is really changing with this tech boom.
So as far as the SF propositions go, with Proposition K, the real concern is that it's all policy and no action. And it is. The other thing with Prop G is that people are really at odds over it because on one hand, it's seen as a way to curb Ellis Act evictions. And on the other, it's just another super high tax. And taxing maybe isn't always the solution to our problems. So, you know, it's pretty much as controversial as the 8 Washington Project, which we saw last November, Props B and C. And that got rejected, but it was hotly contested.
And you covered the 8 Washington story. Remind us what the controversy was there.
So 8 Washington was a luxury condo development that was going to be built down by the waterfront. And it really ended up symbolizing this huge, huge fight against luxury versus affordable housing. And it went through this very, very expensive and long city planning process that ended up with the developer having to ask for a rezoning for a higher height on the waterfront, which turned into this don't build a wall on the waterfront campaign. Even though the city recommended a higher height during the planning process. So the opposition campaign, the no wall on the waterfront campaign, really played up that zoning issue. But the reason I think that voters said no to the 8 Washington Project was because of what it symbolized. And that was the city approving luxury development when affordable housing is so sorely needed. But again, the planning community is really against ballot box planning. So you're seeing many people speaking out saying that that's not how things should have gone.
And when you say ballot box planning, you mean whether voters should be making zoning decisions.
Yeah. So when you talk about housing, you're getting into some really technical, nitty-gritty stuff that experts spend a lot of time researching and thinking about. According to Gabriel Metcalf, who's executive director of the urban planning think tank SPUR, voters can be swayed by a slogan and all that expertise gets overlooked. And, you know, that's what a lot of the conversations were about after the 8 Washington defeat. And it makes things that are really complicated sound really simple. Here's Metcalf talking about ballot box planning and how it's all about how you pose the question.
Of course, if you ask the voters, do you want tall buildings on the waterfront, then the answer will be no. But if you ask them, do you want to add to the housing supply, then the answer would be yes.
And because this is the way San Francisco tends to do things, it's very expensive to run a ballot measure to get your zoning. So a lot of projects just don't have the budget for it. You know, the ones that do are going to be like 8 Washington and are going to be able to put up the money. But those that don't are just not going to be built.
And that sounds a lot like the underbuilding you talked about in the piece we just heard.
Absolutely. And in the long run, the result of this convoluted ballot zoning process is exactly where we are today. San Francisco needs to build a lot faster than it has been to address this affordability crisis.
That's KALW's Liz Pfeffer on housing issues and the upcoming election. Find more information at KALW.org. Click on Elections 2014.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. There's something else in store for Bay Area houses this week: trick-or-treating. Kids in costumes will head door-to-door this Friday night for Halloween. Some of those costumes might include a little scary makeup. Costume makeup is an art form, and that's where San Franciscan Martha Villa comes in. She's been using latex, lipstick, and lashes to transform people into drag queens, zombies, and runway models for more than 30 years. But for Martha Villa, makeup is about more than just painting faces. Reporter Rebecca Robinson has more.
From the outside, Martha Villa's home blends in with the other modest buildings in her quiet outer Richmond neighborhood.
Hello, hello. Come on in.
Inside, however, it's a shrine to the strange.
There's a lot of altar stuff going on over there.
Yeah. Wolfman vampire teeth are stacked on a bookshelf. Plaster face mold stares up from her living room floor. Today, she's transforming her longtime friend and frequent model, Christina Orlova, who's eagerly investigating one of Via's new liquid foundation colors.
I just got that, so if you like it...
Then I can have it?
Of course.
Via has been doing tarot card readings for decades and recently began creating her own card deck. Using her friends as models, she does their makeup and photographs them as the various archetypes: the Empress, the Devil, the Fool, and today, a gypsy.
All right, so the magic begins.
Orlova, a natural blonde, dons a black wig for the role. Via selects a soundtrack, and Orlova's transformation begins. She pulls a tube of jet black liquid from a makeup box the size of a small suitcase.
Her eyes have to mesmerize you. They have to grab you from across the room.
Orlova has worked with many different makeup artists in her decades-long modeling career. Via, she says, has something special.
Not every person who's trying to get the look or the shot they're trying to get can get you to relax and get you to deliver that image. She has a really great sense of humor, so she makes you laugh. So it really becomes really fun.
Fia's fascination with makeup began during her teenage years in the early 80s with a very teenage obsession, rock stars. Sweet dreams are
made of these. Back in that time period, watching all these makeup artists doing these great works on all these different singers, you know, from Annie Lennox to Boy George, that was inspiring. I was like, oh, I think I want to do this.
At age 18, she paid her way through beauty school with money she'd saved working at the old Woolworth in downtown San Francisco. Her first gig came from a customer.
I just had like a little art box made out of wood that I took all my oil paints out of and then just put whatever little makeup I had, and I considered myself ready.
She had no idea how big her big break would be.
It was the Black Filmmakers Hall of Fame.
That's an Academy Award-style gala held in Oakland celebrating African-American achievement in cinema. She was shocked and nervous, but impressed the backstage crew.
They were like, girl, add more color, just don't be afraid.
Via had found her calling.
To paint on someone's face was so exciting because afterwards you ended up with this incredible masterpiece.
She worked behind the scenes for years at local fashion shows and even made up models at a Versace runway extravaganza. But over time, she tired of the industry's diva complexes and predictable formulas and found a world where her creativity could run free, San Francisco's drag scene.
I would, every year, have a lineup of 15 gay men that would come to me every year, and I would have to do makeup on each one of them to match their outfit, and then they'd go out into, you know, the Castro and just run amok.
Making men into drag queens was no easy feat. Especially when the would-be women were football players.
I walk in and there's this like room full of giants. I mean, the shoulders were huge, the muscles were rippling. I'm like, wow, how am I going to pull off a woman? And it's like they look like the Incredible Hulk. It was amazing to see them transform.
While Via loves the flamboyant fun of the drag scene, her true love is monster makeup. Her face lights up as she explains how to create a realistic zombie bite.
If something were to actually bite your skin, you'd have a raised, you know, area, right? Because the body's reacting off the bite. So I have to create a layer of latex over her own skin, then create the bumps that are raised a bit around the bites themselves.
Her greatest monster muse is her son, Michael Chua. She's been transforming him into classic horror movie villains since he was old enough to walk. Chua has fond memories of raising hell at Halloween.
We made gelatin that had boils that came off of my skin with like things oozing out of them. And I remember walking down the street and all of these kids would flee before me.
Now he is 30 and does his own makeup for costume parties. He and Via attend events and theme parties together, from zombie proms to a recent steampunk costume ball.
I went to a store and got these like fake ram horns, and I attached those to a headband, and I just did all this insane makeup, and people wanted to take pictures of me throughout the entire ball. It was really a great experience.
Chua dares anyone skeptical of makeup as an art form to take a closer look.
It's really just painting on a living canvas.
In Via's living room, her living canvas, Orlova, is ready for the great reveal.
So, this is the moment of truth.
Via takes photos of Orlova to immortalize the look for her future tarot cards. Her approach to work is decidedly playful.
Thank you so much. Oh, yeah. Thank you for being my gypsy. Here's a piece of makeup for you. Here's a complimentary gift for joining us in our experience today. All right.
But she's guided by an artistic philosophy that's more than skin deep.
To help people see the beauty I see inside of them and help them express it as a side of themselves that they can't on their own. This is what brings joy for them. You know, they can then see what they've always imagined.
And imagination is the key to true transformation. In San Francisco, I'm Rebecca Robinson for Cross Currents. You can find pictures of Via's work at kalw.org and click on Cross Currents.
And that's it for today's edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Jeremy Dalmas, Leela Day, Jack Detch, Sandhya Dirks, Rachel Dornhell, Marcy Fraser, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Alexis Luna Torres, Ted Muldoon, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. The line producer was Audrey Dilling. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Our managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And you are a big part of our show, and we love hearing from you. So email us at news@kalw.org or connect with us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. This music is by composer Robert Ashley, who died earlier this year. Ashley was director of the Center for Contemporary Music at Mills Halls during the 1970s. The college is remembering him this Saturday. The pre-concert starts at 5 p.m. with a concert at 8. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
It welled up in her, passing the restrictions, leaving the restrictions behind.